Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Michael Kist.
You caught me not listening again.
Benjamin Solak.
You never listen!
It's the Kist and Solak Show, presented by SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation.
You are flying high on the Kist and Solak Show. This is episode 190, brought to you by the fine folk at SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. I am your host, Michael Kist. Follow me on Twitter at Michael Kist NFL. That's K-I-S-T. As always, joined by the best doggone co-host in the game, Mr. 10-Year Streak Without a Bad Day. He is Benjamin Solak. Follow him on Benjamin. Follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak.
Follow him on Benjamin Solak. Just hop right on.
Follow Benjamin Solak at Benjamin Solak. S-O-L-A-K. He's a little rusty, and I've been getting a lot of...
How do we do this? How does this go? What am I supposed to say now?
Well, number one, we got to qualify the fact that you're not fired. I've gotten several DMs. People in the mentions are asking what happened to
you're
the
out here. You're out here tweeting about the fact that you would fire me if you could.
Correct.
Interesting.
Correct. And I absolutely would. I would hire you just to fire you to prove to you that I had the power.
Right. Just to wash my
life.
Little face.
I think this is the part where I say, Ben, how you doing, brother? And Ben.
Yeah, man, everything's delicious. I appreciate you asking. No, every day's a good day to have a good day.
We were gone for less than a month, and people are asking, like, what happened to Ben? We're, like, interacting on Twitter every day. We're playing Warzone together. Like, people chill, man. There's not a whole lot to talk about.
Right. We're a week out from the season now, right? And so, yeah. And obviously, that's the opening kickoff on Thursday, Houston, Kansas City. Eagles don't play until Sunday. We'll prep you for that week one Sunday game, as per usual. But without me being at training camp, without Mike being at training camp, and without people being allowed to post videos of training camp... I mean, it's been pretty much, you know, like the Eagles, you know, cut Elijah Holyfield today. And I was like, all right, feel disappointed. And then I was like, well, didn't really have anything riding on this because not really much to dive into in training camp this year, which is the nature of the beast this year. And it's unfortunate, but there's a lot of worse stuff happening in the league and outside of the league because of COVID. And so unplanned, unscheduled vacation.
Yeah.
Also, we're still here.
Yeah.
I couldn't leave if I tried.
Right. I would not let Ben leave unless I had the power to fire him.
It's the Leo gift from Wolf of Wall Street. I'm not leaving.
Exactly.
Not leaving.
So as the season ramps up, the Kist and Solak Show will ramp up. And obviously, I mean, we had the daily recaps from BGN Radio. We've been doing Quick Jam. We've been doing everything to keep you informed. Our specialty and what we're really waiting for, me and Ben, is to finally get some film to watch, some games to happen, some previews to do. And that's happening very, very soon for the Eagles. But right now, some pertinent news to deal with. And we're not going to dive too far deep into this. I just want to update you on what we see as we record here. As the Eagles make it down to their 53-man cuts, and we had the predictions on the last BGN radio, but the Eagles have waived the following 13 players. Safety Graylin Arnold, who actually was kind of making a push to make the roster there, I guess, according to some. Wide receiver Travis Fulgham, who was a late add. Offensive guard Julian Good-Jones had no idea he was on the roster. As Ben mentioned, running back Elijah Holyfield is out of the rotation. Same with running back Adrian Killens. And then safety Elijah Riley. Tight end Tyrone Swoops, another one that
Swoops.
Came in late. Running back Michael Warren. Offensive lineman Luke Juriga. Wide receiver Deontay Burnett, who was a bit of a surprise. Wide receiver Marcus Green. And wide receiver Manasseh Bailey. There you go. And then
embarrassing that you would not know these names.
And then offensive tackle Andre Dillard was officially moved to injured reserve. This is an ongoing thing as we record this, the information we have now. Obviously, when these things are finalized and they have their final 53-man roster, you're going to probably get a Quick Jam episode. You'll get a BGN radio. You'll get shows covering that as well. That's not the main topic of the show that we are doing today. One of the first things we want to talk about, and this is great that this actually dropped, not great for Zach Ertz, but Ian Rappaport tweeted out, quote, sources, Negotiations between the Eagles and tight end Zach Ertz came to an abrupt halt when Philadelphia made an offer that had less guaranteed money than their offer in November. The backloaded offer also had less cash over the next 4 years annually than Austin Hooper's Browns contract, end quote. Mike Garofalo followed up with, quote, to clarify, my understanding on Zach Ertz's contract situation is that the Eagles have not closed the door on further discussions. The latest go-around didn't result in a deal, but they haven't waved the white flag in the short term and definitely not in the long term. Stay tuned, end quote. So this is going to be an ongoing saga between the two sides. But here's what this tells me as of right now. The Ertz camp is using Austin Hooper's contract as a baseline. The Eagles
aren't. Hooper and Ertz have the same agent. Carriage Sports Groups. Yeah.
So he's trying to get them the same deal, a better deal, and whatnot. And they're saying, and look, it's a new contract for Hooper. In my opinion, it's an overpay. So neither side is wrong here. I mean, if I were Ertz's agent, I'd be saying my player got this much money. The other player got we're asking for this much money for a better player that's more productive. There's nothing wrong with that.
How about Austin Hooper reading this right now, being like, oh, so Steve Kerrich definitely thinks Zach Ertz is better at football than I am. That's fine.
Well, I mean, prove him wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it's not wrong.
If I'm the Eagles, I'm saying, look, you're a top-tier tight end. You're being paid like a top-tier tight end. We want to get a deal done. But right now, you're signed through 2021, and we can't use a bad contract from one team for one player to guide our decision-making. And not only that, this right here shows us the kind of cap trouble that the Eagles are facing and that are now being exacerbated by COVID. They had a better offer out there. Ertz didn't take it in November, and now the realities on the ground have changed, and the offer has changed. And it's unfortunate for both sides. Ertz has to do what's right for him. No gripe with that. The Eagles have to do what's right for them. Ultimately, I want Ertz on the team long term, right? I want what he wants. He wants to retire as an Eagle. I want the same thing. But he has zero leverage right now outside of Wentz being in his corner, which is not nothing. But as of right now, the interest between Ertz and the team, they don't align. And I'm fully behind the Eagles standing firm. Ben, your thoughts?
Yeah, so there's like 12,000 different things that are true about this, which is why we are where we are, which is just like nobody's going to move and nobody should move. And it's just going to see how this plays out. So George Kittle signs 5-year, $75 million extension. Travis Kelce immediately follows that up with a 4-year, $57 million extension, I think it is. Kelce's deal, critically, like did not add, like no signing bonus or something like that. Like basically it's all money that's going to come later. It's super backloaded, right? Which for the Chiefs makes sense because they're going to be tight on the cap for the next like, couple of years. They very famously had like $68 at one point in cap space. They super backloaded the Mahomes deal. They backloaded the Kelce extension because they're going to get through COVID. And then when the salary cap balloons, once COVID revenue streams pick back up, the Chiefs will have to pay all that money to Mahomes and to Kelce, but they were going to have Mahomes and Kelce 3 years from now anyway, so it's fine. So those deals happen. While those deals are happening, the Eagles are looking at their books as they have the least amount of cap space projected for 2021, in which a $175 million cap floor has been set, but given, you know, revenue limitations from COVID, we should expect $175 million to be the cap ceiling in 2021. The Eagles are below that by $75 million about, after they roll over their space from this year. So they need to somehow create money in 2021. Zach Ertz, all right, has a $6.6 million base salary in 2021. Or no, excuse me, that's this year. He has a 6.6 this year. He has an $8.25 million base salary in 2021. Well, if you believe Zach Ertz, in 2021, he'll be 30. If you believe him to be a member of your team in 2022 and 2023 and 2024 after his age 30 season, well, then you can do what the Eagles have already done three times with Zach Ertz, Mike, which is take that base salary on guaranteed money, fold it into guaranteed money, signing bonus, option bonus, and put it on future years. And that way you don't have to pay that money in 2021. You pay a fraction of it in 2021, and then a fraction in 22, 23, 24, 25. So the Eagles certainly were, before the Kelce and the Kittle deal, were going to sit down with Zach Ertz and be like, brother, you know this thing you've done for us three times where you've guaranteed your long-term standing on our roster because you've put money into future years, and in return, we get to turn that money into guaranteed money and spread it out over multiple caps and we get to lower cap hits. Let's do that again, because you're going to be around, we're going to be around, and let's do it. that was a lot easier before Zach Ertz, you know, the deal that he signed when it was signed was a 5-year, $42.5 million $42.5 million deal. So it's 8.5. It's 8.5 million per year. Yeah. Kelsey and Kill are at like $15 million a year, right? And Ertz is not as good as Kelsey. He's not as good as Kittle. But boy, if he ain't the third best tight end in the NFL,
right,
and he's making 60% APY of what these guys are making. So when the Kelsey and the Kittle deal signed, it did not change the reality of the Eagles need to restructure. Zach Ertz has a big base salary, and they've restructured his base salary previously. They have a good relationship with him. That reality still exists. But the reality exists for Zach Ertz that is, listen, if we're sitting down talking about my contract, I'd like to talk about the amount of money I'm making. Mm-hmm. And the Eagles can extend him and increase his yearly, his APY, the amount of money he makes per year, while also pushing money into future years. But Zach Ertz has to be okay with that money getting put backloaded in future years. He's not getting it right now. The trade-off is that the figure's got to be really big. The thing with that is that the Eagles have a young man named Dallas Goedert who's going to be looking at a new contract in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the simple reality, especially like even before COVID, but again, like another truth of the situation, is that the Eagles probably at some point have to choose Ertz or Goddard.
Right.
And because of COVID, they might get stuck choosing Ertz because they have to restructure that deal to make more space in 2021, thereby ensuring Ertz stays on the roster for the next couple of years. And then it makes it harder to extend Goddard because the Eagles are very vocal about thinking Goddard's like a top 10 tight end. Well, you're going to have to pay him like a top 10 tight end when his contract's up in 2021,
yep,
right? Both he and Ertz right now are up in 2021. So there's very, very many truths. Ertz has done a ton of work with the Eagles to help them restructure his deal. He deserves to be treated well by the team, be given a big payday, given the Kelsey and the Kittle deals. The Eagles need Ertz to be nice to them, to create some cap space. Ertz is better than Hooper. That's the truth.
Yep.
Dallas Goedert might be better than Ertz as a receiver. He might be better than Ertz as a blocker. He might be cheaper on another contract that might help the Eagles. That's the truth. We've got a lot of balls in the air, pots on the stove in the Eagles tight end room right now. And obviously COVID kind of makes all these decisions at higher stakes. So the Eagles and Ertz aren't going to do anything this year. I'd be stunned if they get something done this offseason. This upcoming season is a big deal because if Deshaun's healthy, Rager's healthy, Wentz starts throwing it to wide receivers a little bit more, if Goddard continues to look good,
right,
Eagles are not going to be incentivized to tie themselves to Ertz for the next 3-4 years by restructuring that deal.
Yeah.
They're going to have Ertz play out that deal and then let him go and just take the cap hit in 2022 when all of his option voided years circle back on the prorated money, circles back onto the cap, which is the grave they've dug for themselves. But that plus Goddard might be cheaper and also might be better player in the long term. And that's why that Goddard pick really throws a wrench in the whole situation. So don't blame Zach Ertz for trying to go get his. Zach Ertz has an extremely good case for being like, I deserve to be paid by this team who has restructured my deal 3 times, right? Like that is a great argument. And Ertz is a good player, but he's not Kelsey's not Kittle, and Goddard waiting in the wings hurts his spot. So it's going to be interesting to watch next 9 months, see how this goes.
Like we said, you know, the Eagles have a reason to be patient. Ertz has a reason to go after it and try to get paid, just like any player trying to go get paid, get your guaranteed money when you can get it, because you never know what the next football year is going to hold. So again, I'm not blaming either side of what's going down here. So it's something to follow. And like you said, the Eagles are probably going to have to make a decision between the two right now. Unfortunately for Ertz, he has no leverage and they can kind of play this thing out and we'll see. And maybe that's when Goddard takes his next big step and shows that he is a top 10, top 5 tight end in the league. Hopefully for the Eagles, that's the case. You know, never have a problem choosing between two really good players. This is also in transactional news as far as contracts. Diana Russini put out there, Jadeveon Clowney could be with the team very soon. She was told that the Tennessee Titans and the New Orleans Saints are both making strong pushes to sign the free agent. Both teams want him on the field by Monday and are making their pitches. Clowney has kind of screwed himself throughout this process, wanting a certain amount of money that's just not coming to him. And yet he's still unsigned because of that. But now, I mean, the Titans, okay, deep playoff team last year, could definitely be enhanced by Clowney. The Saints being in the NFC worries me more. Number one, they're in the NFC and we're covering the Eagles. Number two, the Saints roster, for me, top to bottom, is the best in the league. And when you look at quarterback, coach, roster, you know, the talent roster, the Saints have a pretty good argument when they play anybody that they have the better of the three. If they add Clowney to the mix, that's an even bigger problem. Ben, your thoughts on this?
This is the most Sean Payton thing I've ever heard.
Right? Just go in on this year.
Alvin Kamara,
Hello? Don't even pay Kamara.
Kamara goes, hello? I would like some money. Sean Payton says, brother, no problem. Yeah. And then he goes to Mickey Loomis. He says, okay, tell them we're thinking about trading Kamara and tell them we're looking after Clowney. I'm Sean Payton. I'm a giant a-hole. Yep. And I love being it. And I'm good at coaching football teams. This is how we're going to do it. I'm dying at Rappaport tweeted about this. Rapp just said, the Titans have also maintained interest in Clowney. The Seahawks have been monitoring, but the Saints are pushing hard. And then he says, Clowney would play right DE, right defensive end, in an even front, on national TV more than he has ever been, with a chance to cash in for 2021 after a one-year deal. If the Saints' selling point to Clowney is, hey, don't worry, we're going to play on the right side the whole time. As if that, like, matters? Like, the whole thing with Clowney is you can move him around.
Yeah.
I have no idea why that's a good selling point. The on national TV more often also kills me. Clowney's not going to the Saints because he can play right defensive end, because he's going to have national television. He's going to pay the Saints because the Saints are going to give him money, and he's going to win a Super Bowl. Yeah. It just depends on how much the Saints are able to give him. I still think Tennessee makes the most sense for him. But if the Saints get him, Rankins, Cameron Jordan, Jadeveon Clowney, Marcus Davenport.
Goodness. Like, what are we talking about there? Absolutely.
It's the best roster in the NFL right now. And if it adds Clowney, it's the best roster in the NFL.
We're going to talk about expectations for the Eagles and predictions on what their record might be. But I just want to throw it out there. Are the Saints your pick to be the number one seed?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense for kind of all the reasons we just talked about. So when we come back here on the Kissed and Solak show, we are going to talk about the expectations for the Eagles entering this year. Maybe we'll throw some predictions out there. We'll also talk about the a bit of a musical chairs happening there along the offensive line and some conflicting messages being put out there. That's coming up next here on the Kissed and Solak show.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smart Water Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smart Water Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smart Water Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
And we are back here on the Kissed and Solak show, episode 190, SB Nation, Bleeding Green Nation, bringing it to you. Ben, simple question for you, man. The over-under for the Philadelphia Eagles wins is at 9.5. Mm-hmm. Are you over or are you under? Leave out who wins the division. I want to ask you about that next. 10 wins, 8 wins, 11 wins, 7 wins. How are you feeling?
I think 9.5 is a good line.
It's a great line.
If I were taking it, I'd take the under. Team's not healthy.
Yeah.
I'm going to describe a team to you with just pronouns, and then you tell me what you think. New offensive coaching staff, massive turnover in the secondary with a new secondary coach, massive turnover at wide receiver with a new wide receiver coach, first round rookie is injured from this year, first round rookie from last year is injured, three-year back-to-back-to-back Pro Bowler is injured, other starting receiver coming back from injury, other starting receiver coming back from injury, starting defensive tackle out with injury, free agent safety addition out with injury, quarterback injury prone.
It Not sounds team? Terrible.
Yeah.
I'll make the point. Some of those turnovers were necessary and probably end up being a plus, okay?
Right. And that's the thing, right? It's like, I think Aaron Moorhead is a win over Carson Walsh and Mike Rowe, right? Like, it is. But also, this is not the year. This is the year of stability, right? That's what everybody talks about. And I think that's generally getting gassed
overblown?
A little bit.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
It still matters.
I tweeted this last week, right? Like, continuity is important all of the time. And usually we don't talk about it enough. And now this year, it feels like it's more important. So we're kind of over-talking about it. Mm-hmm. I think generally continuity is important. And this year it's important. And last year was important. And next year it'll be important. Whatever. But it is to say that the issues that we felt we diagnosed with the Eagles team last year were things of communication, health, and the continuity that resulted from having poor coaching and poor health. So you were constantly shuffling guys around, bringing guys up from the practice squad, whatever, right? That was the issue in Philadelphia last year, right? Like, oh, Carson had a bad game against the Seahawks. Oh, you know, the defense had a bad game against the Redskins, the Washington football team, Redskins at the time. Well, those are symptoms, and the overarching problem was the coaching staff was not communicating well, and they were dealing with so many health problems. Well, they're already dealing with health problems again. And when you have new coaching staffs, which, you know, it's obviously still Peterson and still Schwartz, but a lot of the offensive senior assistants and the position coaches, Corey Unlin, Moorhead, whatever, are turned over, you should expect communications issues. And the Eagles are going to be starting a lot of young new players at new positions. Jalen Mills is moving. Nickel Robey Coleman and Darius Slay are new starters. There's going to be a new starter at safety, whether it's Will Parks or Kayvon Wallace or however that ends up looking, right? Those problems are probably going to persist early into the season. I think the Eagles are going to be a really good team in the back half of the year. But I'm worried what they look like in the first half of the year, especially if they limp into it with no Rager, with no Alshon, with no Parks, with no Hargrave. You know what I mean? Like, this could not look good early. I think they're going to get better as time goes on, but there's reason to be concerned early. So to me, I think they're a 9-win team. Maybe they get to 10 if they get through the first half of the season clean, but I think they're going to finish a lot stronger than they start.
Yeah, it's hard to trust a team that is going through so many injuries. They have the turnover on the medical staff as well, which is supposed to help things, but players get injured, and the Eagles just cannot shake the injury bug, and it's really hurting them. And it's hard to say that they're going to be an over team based on what we've seen because of those injuries, and especially when so much is predicated. I mean, the Eagles have had an awesome offensive line for as long as we've been covering them as, you know, quote unquote professionals or media members This is the most questions we've had about that line coming into this year, even before the Dillard injury that we've had about that line with Brandon Brooks out. And now Andre Dillard is going to miss the year. And the Eagles are like trying to like play this haggling gamesmanship negotiation thing with Jason Peters. He wants more money. And Peterson said, well, he never really said that. And well, we could move him to left tackle, but I haven't really asked him. If I did, I wouldn't tell you. Like, Peterson was real weird in his press conference about it.
Peterson's fully leaning into like, I am old coach who says nothing. I remember rookie coach Peterson who was like, this is my offense. And then pretty much the Wentz Foles debacle of 2018 training camp just turned him so sour on answering any question about anything. And now he's just crotchety and withheld and persnickety. It's terrible. He reminds me of you with times at which we record. Just nitpicking and being annoying. No.
But who starts at left tackle? Is it Jason Peters?
Somebody, I think it was Jeff McClain. Maybe it's not Jeff McClain. Somebody had this tweet where they said, like, the Eagles are starting a left tackle at right guard and a right guard at left tackle because continuity? Question mark? And it's like, it's a really good point. They were trying to make this argument that like, oh, well, Peters has been here at camp at right guard, and so we're just going to try Pryor at left tackle. And it's like, brother, you know what Peters did? You know what Peters did at camp before this? For the last like 8 years?
And he missed days at camp. It was less than 2 weeks that he had been working out at right guard. Totally.
Right. I like the idea of, all right, well, let's see what we've got here at Pryor at tackle at camp right now.
Sure,
right?
Yes.
Versus, let's say Dillard had gone down in week two, right? And they would just been like, all right, Pryor, go! Like, you know, like, I that's good.
The fact
that Pryor is, by all accounts, not a tackle is not surprising to me, right? Mm. And when I wrote about Pryor, when I assumed him to be the starting right guard immediately in the wake of the Brooks injury, I wrote about the fact that this is a Brandon Brooks-sized dude, so he's a tackle-sized guy. Unlike Brooks, he does not have the quickness to potentially play at tackle. He's going to be maximized at guard like Brooks because that size and that length is going to be really beneficial to him. Pryor, as a run blocker, could be valuable at tackle and at guard. The only way to protect his weaknesses in terms of his foot speed, in terms of his bending issues, is to play him at guard. That's where you're going to be able to get him out there and keep things afloat. So to me, the only recourse is Peters at left tackle, Pryor at right guard.
I think you get the best play from both of them at those positions. Just do it.
Right. I mean, you probably, in a vacuum, Peters is a better guard than tackle right now. But within the scope of the offensive line as a whole,
yeah,
absolutely, your better option is Peters at tackle and Pryor at guard. Because even if Peters athletically is not tackle caliber, he probably hasn't been for the last season and a half. Right. And he's been out there surviving, right? Because he is so savvy, so smart, so technically sound. He's been surviving. He and Sam Wallow have played next to each other. Obviously, like in 2017, they didn't love playing next to each other, but they've clearly figured it out. They're not the best at like passing off games and establishing their levels, but it's going to be better than anything you get with Pryor, who does not gain depth. He hates gaining depth. So just play him a guard, play him next to Lane, deal with that. Is it going to be perfect? No, but that's what happens when you have two season-ending injuries to the offensive line. You make do with what you got. And that's the big thing, is people have asked, you know, like people have asked the question, well, how much worse is the Eagles' offensive line really? Somebody said, you know, oh, you know, with Dillard going down, the Eagles' offensive line might be better with Peters at tackle and Pryor at guard. I don't disagree with you, because I make no bones about it, and I don't think listeners to the podcast will be surprised to hear this. I'm not the biggest fan of Andre Dillard. But for all of that, oh, maybe the line is better. The line is so scarily thin.
Yeah.
And that's your concern. That's right. Your big issue is that, yes, if the Eagles start week one with Peters at left tackle, Pryor's at right guard, and start week 17 with Peters at left tackle and Pryor at left guard and everything unchanged, yeah, there's a good chance the Eagles' offensive line keeps their head above water. Got a lot of love for Jeff Stoutland. They got multiple Pro Bowlers, Hall of Famers on that line. They're going to be okay. But you cannot survive one more injury on the line. Can't do it.
And Peters is going to be on the injury report every week. Yeah. He's going to be pulled for snaps. It's going to happen.
Right. You're like, you're gonna put Driscoll, Herbig, Tego Winogo, or Opeta. Either a UDFA from last year or a rookie from this year out in with live bullets in a year where they could not get the same amount of prep they used to get.
Hmm.
It's going to be, you know, they're going to have to make a free agent acquisition. It's going to cost more then than it does now. So it is scary depth issues on the offensive line. Not a problem unique to Philadelphia. A lot of teams deal with scary depth issues.
Yeah.
But it's going to be the case in Philly for the first time, you know, since easily the Wentz era. Yeah. So, you know, that like you said, we've grown accustomed, you and I, to tremendous offensive line play in Philadelphia. And that's never been a greater risk than it is right now.
So you have it as under at 9.5 if you had to pick today. I'm kind of forcing your hand to have a take here. Compare it to the Dallas Cowboys. And look, the Cowboys always have hype coming into the year. They always get the media coverage and everything like that. But, like, is Jason Garrett the reason for them underachieving every year? Are they just better by changing to Mike McCarthy? Not only that, like, is this the best supporting cast that Dak Prescott has ever had and will lead to a big season for him? Possibly a top five season for him. Things are set up really well for Prescott. And when you have that, even with the questions that I have with their defense, they're going to score points. They were one of the best offenses in the league last year. Kellen Moore showed that he could adapt to what defenses were doing to him. I think he's one of the brightest young play callers in the game. So when you compare the two, I mean, I think Dallas is a super real threat. And I don't think this is just hype this year. I think they've got the better chances of winning the division. What about you?
Yeah, you're going to make me have a take. So my answer is, as always, yes and no.
Yeah.
Right? Is it all Jason Garrett? No. It's not all Jason Garrett because they added CeeDee Lamb. And because they have Blake Jarwin, who's probably the best pass-catching tight end that Dax had since he's been there. And because, you know, the Kellen Moore, you know, his onset, his dawn, if Mike McCarthy really lets him cook, which McCarthy's making the point that he's letting Kellen Moore run the offense.
Which is smart.
He had the quote where he's like, I'm doing my best to stay out of the young kid's way. Let him do what he wants to do. And that's smart from a continuity perspective, you know, the theme of this year, but also just from a Kellen Moore is really good at calling plays perspective. So all of that is new for Dak this year. And is good for Dak this year.
Right.
So you say, okay, no, it's not all Jason Garrett. But to what degree was Jason Witten being brought back because Jason Garrett couldn't put his foot down with Jerry Jones and say, no, I don't want this 40-year-old tight end? Right. To what degree was, you know, Kellen Moore's really quality September offensive play designing and play calling, when that was curtailed? To some degree, that was defenses catching up. To some degree, that was also, we need to feed Ezekiel Elliott the rock. Again, why was that decision made and what hand did Jason Garrett have a part in it, right? Because we don't obviously know what's going to happen with McCarthy. But part of being the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys specifically is you have an owner who's very involved. And Garrett was Jones's guy. He was Jones's yes man. And, you know, if Jones is impacting decisions on the week-to-week play calling more so than the average owner is, eventually the head coach has to draw a line somewhere. And Jason Garrett got fired for many reasons, but I believe one of the main reasons was because he didn't draw a line in places he needed to draw a line to keep the Cowboys successful. He let Jerry Jones run his own franchise into the ground and then got fired for it, right? And that's what it is when you have an involved owner. McCarthy bringing the veteranship, bring not a product of Jones's machinations, is going to, I think, have an easier time drawing the line with Jones when Jones says such things as we have to run Ezekiel Elliott more. McCarthy can say, well, we're not going to do that because we're winning football games by passing the football, right? And you know, to whatever degree you buy into McCarthy's dawn of analytics, his come to, you know, EPA Jesus moment, I think that he's going to be pass heavy. I think that he acknowledges that play action is going to be a big part of the offense, and I think that they're going to let Dak do that accordingly. Cowboys offense is going to be wicked.
Mm-hmm.
Cowboys defense is going to be interesting.
Right.
Losing Gerald McCoy hurts. Adding Everson Griffin helps. The pass rush is definitely better. You know, after, like, obviously Robert Quinn was great for them last year, but before Robert Quinn, they were getting on average like 5-6 sacks per year from their second best sack getter, yeah. Right? Which, you know, the Eagles were also have that number on occasion, but they had like 5 guys getting 6 sacks. The Cowboys had 1. So it's a little bit of a difference. Defensive line pass rush has certainly improved. I think that Griffin is a very big deal because of the big ends they've typically liked there. Aldon Smith, we'll see what happens. I'm not putting any stock in him. The lack of interior pass rusher is scary. They either need Tristan Hill or Neville Gallimore, last year's second round pick or this year's third round pick, to step into that McCoy role quickly. Mm-hmm. Linebackers are going to be fine. Lee, Van Der Esch, Jalen Smith, good group. I think both Van Der Esch and Smith did not have a great season last year, but I think both can bounce back. Secondary is where they might just give up 40 points, right? Like, right now, their starting corner, so Byron Jones walks, and they had second round pick Trayvon Diggs, who has apparently looked good in camp. Fourth round pick Reggie Roberson out of Tulsa. I always say Tulane, but I think it's actually Tulsa. Chidobe Awuzie, who's been shaky for them. Jordan Lewis, nickel, has been shaky for them, and then Anthony Brown plays the nickel. So that's their corner. Yeah, their corner room right now. Like, if you ask, all right, who the Cowboys just locked down a wide receiver one for 4 quarters? How? I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, if that happens, either Trevon Diggs was a huge hit outside of the top 50 picks for a rookie corner, that's very rare.
Right.
Or they got a huge step forward from Chido Awuzie, which, again, I don't think is going to happen. Safety-wise, they just cut Ha Ha Clinton Dix, who they signed in free agency. People think it's for Earl Thomas. It's because they really love Darian Thompson, who they signed in free agency from the Giants, who's been great for them in camp, apparently. But Thompson and Xavier Woods is a bottom 16 safety duo in the league, right? Mm-hmm. Even if Thompson is really, really good, like, I think there's a ceiling on him, and Woods obviously is an inconsistent player. They may have to win more shootouts than they'd like to, but they also have the capacity to win some shootouts. And if that defense is even like league average, they're going to beat bad teams and then bully some good teams as well, because that offense is going to be able to spit in your face for 4 quarters. So to me, Cowboys are a clear double-digit win team, whereas the Eagles are on the fringe. So I like the Cowboys for the division.
So if you're mad at us right now, gentle listener, understand this. We are setting this up to say no more excuses for the Dallas Cowboys, no more excuses for Dak Prescott. If they don't get it done, the Eagles were just the better team, and maybe they were a little bit healthier than we expected them to be. That's the best case scenario for the Eagles, is they just stop getting hit with these doggone injuries that keep happening. I'm honestly sick of it, dude. All training camp news is bad news, in my opinion. And we've got nothing but bad news from the Eagles coming out of training camp. Other than, like, you know, the wide receivers looking good. But, like, what does that mean? Because we saw reports of Nelson Aguilar, you know, I think it was like 2018. Oh, he's uncoverable in camp. He had a bad year. So we'll see. We'll see how all of that works out. But I'm excited for the season. The next time that me and Ben talk, we're going to be setting up the game with the Washington football team. As I mentioned on Quick Jam, head coach Ron Rivera has announced that Dwayne Haskins will be the starter, as expected, so that should be fun. Haskins was terrible last year and had a really good game against the Eagles, so that's going to be fun. Ben, what you got? Say goodbye to the gentle listeners.
Oh, I thought you, like, what you got isn't, like, answer that question I just posed, and I was like, I did not hear one.
It was weird. See, we're rusty.
Well, yeah, This is what training camp is for, though. It's for running through the drills, right, knocking the rust off. That's what we're doing.
It's good to have you back from suspension.
Oh, yeah? From what? Unapproved substances? Conduct detrimental to the league?
Not eating fruit? Whatever weird take you have.
Listen, thank you, as always, once again, for listening to the Kiss and Sarlacc Show here on BGN Radio. We do appreciate you waiting through the doldrums of August and swinging by to catch us as we step into September and start the 2020 NFL regular season. A sentence I wasn't sure I'd be able to say, and I'm very pleased to say. If you enjoyed this show, if you're new to BGN Radio and to the Eagles coverage we provide here, we're glad to have you. We're excited about the coverage we bring every season. Mike, you'll be announcing, I think, a rundown of the new show organization probably sometime early next week. We have a couple of changes coming through. You know, new staff, new responsibilities. It's going to be a lot familiar of what you've already seen from us before. Mike and I will certainly still be previewing games for you from a film perspective and be breaking down games for you after they occur. So if you like the show, if you like us, if you like the Eagles, rate, review, and subscribe on whatever app you listen to your podcasts. He's been Michael Kist on Twitter, at Michael Kist NFL. That's KIST. I've been Benjamin Solak on Twitter, at Benjamin Solak. That's Solak. Next week is our first preview week for the season. Oh man, baby, it does feel good to be back, Mike.
I'm excited, and also look out for big news from SB Nation this morning. It's gonna be hot.
All right. I don't know if it's big news. It's average news.
It doesn't involve you, Ben. So, of course, you would say that. We all we got. We all we need. Fly, Eagles, fly.